Hello, and welcome to this Open Systems Media webinar titled Open Community Source, Licensing and Pricing That Just Makes Sense. I'm Mike Demler, Editorial Director for Open Systems Media's DSP-FPGA and EDA Digest publications. I will be serving as moderator for this webinar. Let us begin with an introduction to our topic today. Large distributed systems present big architectural challenges, pushing scale and complexity as never before. Regardless of the industry in which these systems are deployed, they all face the same problem. Software structure and costs are out of control. The technical solution is to standardize on common infrastructures, but current pricing and licensing models make this expensive. Pricing must evolve to match infrastructure technology. In this webinar, you will learn about new, easy ways to license and lower costs and how to more easily deploy mission-critical software across distributed systems, both large and small. Our presenter will describe Open Community Source, which provides the leading implementation of the Object Management Group Data Distribution Service standard, free to software teams. By combining Open Community Source licensing with royalty-free distribution in very low-cost commercial licenses, this is a solution that makes common software architecture both achievable and affordable for the first time. Before we get started, I have just a few housekeeping items. Today's presentation will consume about 50 minutes, leaving us 10 minutes or so for questions at the end. There are several on-screen buttons for you to take notice of. First, by clicking on the Enlarge Slides button, you will be able to view the slides in full screen mode. You will also find a button on your screen that allows you to download a copy of the slides. There's a Forward to a Friend button, and you can use that to send an email to a colleague inviting them to join us for this live event. Finally, you will also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address your questions during our closing Q&A session. If you have a question pertaining to the webcast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the presentation. We may not get to all of your questions before the end of our allotted time, but in that case, someone will get back to you after the webcast with more information. Finally, this webcast will be posted online shortly after the event, and an audio podcast will also be made available. We'll have more details about that at the end. So on to the presentation. Our speaker today will be Kurt Schacker, Chief Commercials Officer at RTI. Kurt has more than 20 years of experience starting as a software engineer developing flight software for the NASA Hubble Space Telescope before moving on to a career in worldwide sales, marketing, and business development. Over to you, Kurt.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Appreciate the introduction, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this RTI webinar. And let me start by saying that there's an awful lot going on at RTI right now. You may have noticed we made a couple of major announcements this week. First of all, we announced a major revision of our RTI Connects family of products, version 5.0. Lots and lots of new features to enable next generation mission-critical real-time systems. I hope you'll go to our website and take a look at the announcement and the data sheets. Some pretty exciting new capabilities in that product. And secondly, as Mike indicated, RTI is in the process of introducing a brand new business model, which is really designed to facilitate a couple of really important things going on in industry right now, and those are interoperability and also common software infrastructures. And we really believe this is a vitally important step going forward, and of course that's the subject of today's webinar. So with that, we will go ahead and get started. Just by way of agenda, I'll start out with a brief introduction of RTI, just in case you don't know who we are, tell you a little bit about what we do. And then I really want to dive in and spend a little bit of time on the motivation for the business model. Of course, I think a lot of people are curious about what we're doing there, but I think it's important to set some of these changes in context and understand what we're really trying to accomplish from an industry perspective. So we'll spend a little time talking about the goals of the twin goals of interoperability and common infrastructure, and then how that translates into some of the business challenges that I think are associated with the way infrastructural software companies license and price their technology. And then with that, I think we'll be in a good position to introduce what RTI calls its infrastructure community program. And this is our new model for engaging with our customers going forward. And there's lots and lots of new, and I think pretty exciting stuff in here. And then hopefully we'll have some time at the end for some of your questions, because I'm sure there'll be quite a few. So with that, let me start by just providing a brief introduction to RTI. If you're not familiar with us, we are the world leader in communication software for real-time systems. There's lots of ways to measure leadership, but in this case, we can point to hundreds of thousands of deployed copies of our technology out there in many, many applications across lots of industries. We're now north of 500 unique design wins for our technology, and so we've certainly had a lot of experience with people building a broad, diverse set of real-time distributed systems. And we're very much a standards leader. Our entire corporate product strategy is really oriented around standards. And, of course, one of the primary ones that we support is the data distribution service from the OMG, which we authored and which we continue to co-chair today. Now, again, if you're not, you know, familiar with just to sort of set the domain a little bit here, when we talk about real-time systems, these are depictions, photographs of actual products and systems that we are in today. So all of these are, you know, they have a few attributes that I think are very important. First of all, they're mission critical in the utmost sense. Failure is basically not an option in these systems, and they're real-time, meaning that the you know, they respond to real-world events and responding to those events and processing the data associated with those events is critical to the functionality of those systems. Fundamentally, what our technology does, among many other things, is get data from where it's produced to where it needs to be consumed and when it needs to get there in a very reliable fashion. And these systems rely on that fundamentally. When that doesn't happen, that is typically considered a failure scenario, and of course, that's not something that can happen. So that's really the way, sort of a very short description of the way people use our technology today and our products. So again, as I mentioned, I'd really like to spend a little bit of time on the motivation for what we're doing, and I want to talk about these two goals of common infrastructure and interoperability. Starting with common infrastructure, of course, this is not a new goal. It's been, I think, something companies have been interested in doing in terms of, you know, standardizing on an architecture, on an infrastructure that they can deploy across projects and programs throughout their organizations. I think that's been a goal of industry for a long time, but it's been pretty slippery to achieve for a number of reasons, which we'll touch on here in this webinar. But there's some very good reasons for why, of course, companies want to do this, being able to leverage the familiarity with the technology across the people in the organization, of course, reuse technology from project to project and program to program. And, of course, I think a lot of people believe that if they do this successfully, then they'll be able to bring their products, their systems to market faster, and, of course, that translates into cost savings as well. So, obviously, some very important things here, and I think something industry has been working for some time now. I think interoperability, first of all, is very closely related to the notion of a common infrastructure. In fact, they're really sort of almost two sides of the same coin. But interoperability is something that's showing up sort of more lately on the scene. And the notion of interoperability is really about doing more with what you have. The idea that by enabling systems to share information and services with each other, that the whole can sort of be greater than the sum of the parts. And we also believe that when an interoperable architecture is pushed into a company's supply chain, that it can improve the competition among their suppliers, which, of course, would contribute to even further cost reductions. And we really believe, and I think we're seeing this within the customer base, that when interoperability is adopted as a strategy, it can really result in significant competitive advantage. So we're going to talk a lot about interoperability here because we really believe it's one of the highest order goals that we're seeing in industry right now. And a lot of what we're doing from really kind of a product and business perspective at RTI is designed around helping our customers achieve what we think is a very important objective. In fact, I'll go ahead and put a definition up here. There's a white paper on RTI's website that you can go check out. And in that white paper, it's a very thorough treatment of this topic. And one thing you'll see in there is a formal definition that we would put forward of interoperability. So the ability of systems to provide services and accept services from other systems and to use the services so exchanged to enable them to operate effectively together. I think it's a sensible definition, but in spite of that, I think interoperability is a relatively misunderstood topic today. We've also seen many, many attempts in industry at achieving interoperability. I think one of the real issues is that some organizations have made the assumption that if they use certain technologies or they adopt certain standards, then the net result of that or outcome of that will be interoperability. But in fact, there's actually much, much more to it than that. And I think I'd say at this point, a discussion in a lot more detail is probably beyond the scope of this webinar. But I'd really encourage you to take a look at this. As I said, the white paper on our website is one good source of information. And I think this is, as I said, an important trend that we're seeing. We are seeing some success stories out there, importantly as well, and I'll talk about a couple of those. So one of them is the UAS control segment, or called UCS. And it's an architecture or a framework representing the software-intensive capabilities of current and emerging UAS programs across the U.S. services, Army, Navy, and Air Force. The goal here is to develop an architecture based on SOA principles that will be eventually adopted by each of the services as a common basis for acquiring, integrating, and extending the capabilities of control systems for UAS. And really, in order for UCS to really achieve its full vision, it really has to be able to implement interoperability at the architectural level. What's interesting when you look at UCS as a program is that, of course, it's ambitious and it's actually quite large. There are over 100 members, organizations of the in the various working groups, with over 300 actively participating people across these organizations. And I think what this does is it helps to provide sort of an understanding of the organizational complexity of interoperability. So in other words, it's not just a technical challenge, it's an organizational challenge as well, and as we'll talk about, it's also a business challenge. A second example I'll point to is the Future Interoperability Camp Protection System. So this was a research program that was sponsored by the European Defense Agency, and it was designed to demonstrate interoperability between the various subsystems in a camp protection system. The project was completed, and it resulted in a successful demonstration of two independently developed camp protection systems. One of those was developed by Rheinmetall, which is a German company, and the other was developed by a French system integrator, and unfortunately I don't have permission to mention their name. But in these systems, they were able to monitor and control the effectors and sensors from the other subsystems, even though each of the systems was developed independently. So it was a really sort of graphic example of what interoperability can really allow you to do, to, as I said, exchange services between two independently developed systems. It's quite a powerful concept and something that I think is very well worth aspiring to. And then I'll also mention the generic vehicle architecture. So GVA now has been adopted as a UK MOD standard. It's called DEFSTAN 2309, and it defines the Vtronics architecture for all future MOD ground vehicle procurements. So This is actually one of the few examples I know of in which an interoperable architecture has actually now been formally incorporated into an MOD standard. So I think they're one of the great examples to look at in terms of really having progressed this issue forward. So now the examples I've pointed to so far are all military, but we are really seeing just as much effort going on, albeit maybe with some twist to it, in commercial industries. I think the difference is that in the case of government and the defense industry, they're really out there publicly promoting interoperability objectives for their key programs because they feel that it enhances the competitive nature of the supply chain, decreases costs, and ultimately increases operational utility. Whereas I think what we're seeing in the commercial world is more of an interest in gaining competitive advantage, and I think because of that, we don't see quite as much publicity around the topic. But I can assure you in many, many meetings with companies building mission-critical systems in the commercial world, we're seeing just as much of a focus on this area. And in fact, having said that, I'll point to one that I can say just a word or two about, which is DocBox. So what DocBox is working toward is really an effort to create a complete system for managing the devices and the workflow in a hospital environment. The big payoff here is really to enable hospital staff to allocate a greater proportion of their time away from sort of administrative tasks and spending more time with patients, which is a very big issue in the medical industry. And again, they feel that this fundamental dimension of the architecture of their system is interoperability and something they're working very hard towards. So this is one commercial example that's out there that I am fortunately able to point to. So, as I said, we're starting to see some successes out there, which really indicates to me that the industry is coming to terms with the technical challenges of achieving interoperability. There's still a lot of work to do, but I think we're starting to get our arms around it. And one thing I would say is that a common thread to these systems is the interest in using the OMG's data distribution standard as the basis for an interoperable architecture. Because DDS is a data-centric middleware, DDS has really emerged, I would say, as the standard upon which these mission-critical real-time interoperable systems are being based. Now, I trust many of you who are on this call are probably already somewhat familiar with DDS. Again, beyond the scope to go into that in a lot of detail here, but of course, if you're interested in learning more, there's lots and lots and lots of information about the standard and, of course, about RTI's implementation of the standard available on our website. So I'm going to turn now to some of the business challenges. If you're persuaded that the goals of common infrastructure and interoperability are important goals to try to accomplish, then I think we need to start to look at what's preventing us from getting there. And so that's what we're going to talk about next. And the way I really come at this is to look at what is the sort of the critical enabling capability. And from my perspective, it's about collaboration. I mean, what is collaboration fundamentally? It's the ability of people and teams to work together within organizations to essentially leverage each other's work, to benefit from the sharing of their ideas, their innovations, ultimately their intellectual property. If you really look at commonality of infrastructure and interoperability, it's essentially impossible to get there without the ability to collaborate. And so we have to really ask ourselves, what's standing in the way of collaboration? And I would say in many cases what's getting in the way is the way the infrastructural software, which is really critical to enabling these goals, the way that technology, the way those products are licensed and priced, sometimes actually becomes a real roadblock to enabling this collaboration. And as I say, if you can't collaborate, then you're not going to be able to achieve these objectives. And so this is the fundamental sort of issue that caused RTI to really step back and examine these practices within our organization to see what we could do to really facilitate collaboration. And so let's talk about that a little bit more. And I think, you know, what we really need to do is look at sort of what's the root cause of the problem here. And I would put forward as, I guess, a thesis that a lot of it has to do with license scope. So we have to start by remembering that all licenses have scope. And what a scope does is it basically says, you know, who can use the software and for what purpose can they use it? And, of course, you know, who doesn't get to use it and what purposes can it not be used for? And what I would say is that if you look across the industry of sort of infrastructural software, and here we're talking about things like middleware and operating systems and networking protocols and those sorts of technologies, most licenses tend to have a scoping of the use of that license to a project. What is a project? Well, it's sort of a group of engineers, distinct team of engineers working on building something, and it gets defined. And certainly, there's some back and forth in negotiating those definitions. But once they're set up, then that scope is in place. And again, that the issue there is that that scoping can become an impediment to the type of collaboration that we're talking about, because in most software licenses, if you look at what's there, you know, you're going to see that sharing, for example, is not allowed. So you're not allowed to, you know, transfer software between projects. And the other issue you often run into is that a lot of vendors will structure their pricing models around a volume-based schedule where the first few things, whatever those things are, cost a lot, and then, you know, you pay progressively less per thing as you go down the schedule. But again, you know, depending on how projects are defined, that can make a huge difference in licensing fees, depending on how narrow or how broadly the project is defined. So this is a pretty important, you know, practical issue for program managers. Now, I have to say, this is where, you know, some folks are going to say, ah, well, yes, of course, this is why we use open source. But let me just say, you know, I don't think open source is a silver bullet either. And I think the evidence of that is that there's still a very, very vibrant commercial software industry out there. So I think there's a lot more to consider there, and there's a lot more to say in that subject. And in fact, if you're interested in RTI's views on sort of more focused on, you know, licensing models and open source in particular, I would invite you to another webinar that we're going to be giving. It's actually on October 16th, which I believe the title of that is Open Source 2.0 with a question mark. So that's an intriguing title and something that probably many of you will be interested in. Okay, so, you know, if those are the issues, then, you know, I think naturally the logical progression here is, so what does an ideal model look like? Well, you know, I think where it starts is to really, really relax that notion of a project restriction and really broaden the scope out to encompass multiple projects. I mean, there are such natural things as projects. Many companies, you know, refer to their various development efforts as projects, and so there is some, you know, there is sort of a natural delineation there. But I think what an ideal model would do is first by start saying, let's get rid of those sort of artificial distinctions between projects. And let's come up with a scope that does not create that limitation. And in fact, if we really want to think very open-mindedly about this, let's not even limit it to a single company, right? So if there's if collaboration makes sense within a company, between two companies, between multiple companies, between companies and organizations within the government, well, you know, why not, right? If the goal is commonality and interoperability, and that requires collaboration, well, let's enable that collaboration, and let's not put up these artificial barriers. So that's really what I think what the starting point for, you know, for this ideal model looks like. And so, you know, and then the other part of this is, you know, what is the, you know, what about the license fees themselves? What do we do there? So, you know, you can talk about the scope of the license, but what about the costs? And I think, again, the industry hasn't always done itself a service in many ways, because I think, you know, a lot of the software licensing models that are out there tend to be very, very complicated. It's sort of hard to figure out what stuff is going to cost. There's a lot of uncertainty, and that's not good. So, you know, what are the goals here? Well, first of all, I think it needs to be simple. You shouldn't have to have a PhD to understand a vendor's price list. Secondly, it should be predictable, because if it's not predictable, then you can't budget. You shouldn't have to ask yourself, geez, how much is this stuff going to cost next year? But it also needs to be fair. I think one of the problems with a lot of models is that if you have a large project, then the license fees are sort of amortized over the entire budget, and you know, and it sort of, you know, can make sense. But a lot of times in those kinds of models, small projects really get penalized. And it almost becomes unaffordable for a very small project within a larger organization. And I think that's just a killer because, of course, you know, a lot of great innovation is done by very, very small teams, and we don't want to, you know, obviously to exclude them from being able to, you know, to participate in all of this. And then finally, I would say scale with perceived value. And this is, again, an interesting one because, you know, the question is you know, what is the, you know, what is the driving parameter that, you know, has you go from, you know, one license fee to a higher license fee? And I don't think people have an issue where they're getting more value, paying more money. That's not really the problem. But I think when there's a misalignment between the perception of the value received and the license fees, I think that's where people get out of sorts. And what I would put forward is that for, at least for this category of infrastructural software, I think most people perceive value to be associated with the size of the development team, in contrast to the number of units that are deployed. Right. So the bigger the team, I think people say, look, I've got a bigger team, I'm willing to pay, you know, some more money for license fees. But when you say, I'm going to ship, you know, 1,000 units instead of 100 units, and therefore I have to pay 10 times as much, I think for a lot of people that's a little bit of a tough sell in terms of their perception of value. And so, you know, we believe that, and that has definitely informed the way that that we have structured this model. And so with that, hopefully it's well teed up now, and what I'd like to do is introduce something to you that I'm personally very excited about. We call it the Infrastructure Community Program, and it is a brand new and really completely overhauled business model from RTI, and it really reflects everything that we've been talking about here. So we're going to use the term infrastructure community a lot, and so what we probably ought to do is start with a definition of that. So what do we mean by an infrastructure community? Well, you know, it's any organization with a goal of adopting a common software infrastructure across groups, programs, systems, or applications. Okay. Now, I've talked a lot about interoperability. You don't see interoperability in this definition. We believe that many people who are interested in adopting these common software infrastructures are doing so for the purpose of achieving interoperability, and in addition to many of the other benefits. So, you know, we don't really even need that part of the definition in there. So, you know, if you're an organization that, you know, has that goal, and, you know, you are of a, you know, we'll call it a reasonable size, and we can talk more about what that is, then you really qualify as an infrastructure community. It's meant to be a very inclusive definition. Some examples, entire government industry standards communities, some of the ones that we've talked a little bit about. Individual companies or divisions within a corporation. Development sites, multi-company joint efforts, all of these are good examples of infrastructure communities. Again, all we're really looking for here is organizations, and I use that term loosely, who are interested in collaborating for the purpose of achieving a common infrastructure. And that's really the sort of the cornerstone of this model. It's the thing upon which the rest of the model is really based. So what do you actually get here? Well, once you are instantiated as an infrastructure community, then we start to immediately make some stuff available to you. The first is our flagship product, RTI DDS. We provide that along with the full source code to that product. We provide it with binaries for Linux and Windows so that you can actually start, you know, working and doing stuff on a stable platform. And we provide that with the ability to acquire support for that on a time and materials basis. The license, we think, is innovative. This is what we'll be talking about on October 16th. We call it an open community source license. And, you know, it has some pretty interesting features. First of all, the source code that we are providing to you is fully shareable across the infrastructure community. So anybody who is a qualified member of your infrastructure community, you can share that source code with them. In addition, you can modify that source code, and you can share your modifications with them. Okay. Beyond that, you can deploy this. You can deploy the software in binary form as part of an application. Okay. And the cost to do all of this is free. It's free of charge. So this is RTI's effort to really make the technology that we think is really the cornerstone of building interoperable systems and common architectures, to make that technology available on a broad basis, really, really easy to get, so that people can really learn about what they're capable of doing with the RTI products and the data distribution service. I do want to point out here, when I say RTI DDS, this is our latest product. As I mentioned earlier, we shipped the 5.0 version of our products this week, and this is based on the 5.0 product. So this is not an old version of our software. So that's the starting point. Now, beyond that, one of the things I talked about at the very beginning is that RTI has, we've been doing this for a while, and we've got over 500 different systems, applications, if you will, across multiple industries across the world that our technology has been designed into, and that we've had a very close relationship with in helping those products be developed and brought to market. And of course, in that process, we have learned a great deal about all the various interesting technical challenges associated with building these very, very advanced systems. And what we've done is we've really incorporated all of that learning and understanding into what we call our RTI Connext family of products. And so what these are really our advanced products. You see them here. I'm not going to go through them in detail here, but there are several different packages. We have RTI Connext DDS. We have RTI Connext Messaging, Integrator, Tools, and we have Micro, and we have our certifiable version of Micro. So these are the different members, family members, that make up the RTI Connext product line. As I said, this really represents everything we've learned in multiple years associated with helping companies build next-generation systems. And we also make these products available to the infrastructure community when they are interested in taking advantage of these advanced technologies. And again, you can learn a lot more about these capabilities from our website or attending some of our other webinars. So let's talk about some of the pricing for this, okay? So first of all, how are we pricing this? Well, starting point is we're pricing it on a per-developer basis, and the starting point here is $1,000 per developer. Not $10,000, not $100,000, $1,000 per developer. And it's a flat per-developer rate. So there's no volume discounts. You know, you don't pay a whole bunch for the first and not much for the, 20th. It's a $1,000 starting point, and, it doesn't matter how big or small your project is. So if you're a small team, you're not locked out of this, the market-leading technology, because we think this is a pretty affordable price for really just about anybody. All of the products are provided in source code form for the libraries, and as with the RTI DDS product under the Open Community Source License, there are no royalties here for shipping a binary version of this with your product. So the royalties now go away. And what you can see we're doing is we're scaling our business with the developers. So we're really sort of putting our money where our mouth is. We believe in this notion of where the value is perceived, and so that's how we are scaling our business, is based on the developers that are using our software, rather than shipping products out the door in deployed systems. So that is a short overview. I think it hits the key points, but I'm sure you'll want to know more details. And again, you can find out a lot more about it by contacting us directly or checking out our website. Now, as I mentioned, just wanted to say a word about RTI Connects 5.0. We're shipping that product as of this week. We're really, really excited about this. We've got some new enterprise integration patterns to really enable another set of use cases for complex systems. We think people are going to be excited about that. We've introduced a new level of scalability. One of the things we're seeing is much, much, much bigger distributed systems than we've seen in the past, hundreds of thousands potentially of discrete data points. How do you move that stuff effectively and efficiently around a network? Well, scalability is a huge issue now. We've introduced a brand new tool called the Admin Console that really provides a system-level perspective on a complex distributed system and really lets you understand at a level of intimacy that's never been available before. What's going on inside that system, we think that's very powerful. And then, 70 features beyond that. So lots and lots and lots of stuff in there. If you're already an RTI customer, of course, you're eligible to download this. If not, I encourage you to go to the site and take a look at it. So just a quick summary on the infrastructure community, and then I think it looks like we will have time to get to some of your questions. So as I mentioned earlier, we're really kind of putting our money where our mouth is here. This is not a deprecated version or an old release of our software. This is the latest version of RTI DDS, and it's available for free under the Open Community Source License. So as I said, once you're instantiated as an Open Community Source licensee, as an infrastructure community, then you're eligible to begin using this product immediately. And we really, really think that this is going to enable just kind of a step function forward in the use of this technology to enable these next generation systems. Again, the advanced products are provided for what we believe is a very low and very fair flat fee per developer license fee. The source code is included. There are no royalties when you're under this model. And really, I think it measures up. If you remember, we sort of said, what's the test of this? Simple, predictable, affordable, and it scales in a way that makes sense to you. And I would ask you to go back and really sort of look at the major points of this license. And we're pretty convinced that it stands up to the test of those criteria. In fact, as a measure of that, we've now signed up over 20 infrastructure communities, and really of all shapes and sizes. It's very, very interesting going through this process. Government organizations, hybrid organizations between government and industry, single companies, combination of companies, big, small, just about everything you can imagine. Aerospace and defense, commercial industries, really across the board. It's very, very well sampled through the 20 plus that we've signed up. And I think that's, and again, we've done that before we ever made the public announcement. And we've got a pipeline that's actually much bigger than that of conversations that we're having with potential infrastructure communities going forward. So, ultimately for me, that's the real test of the of how good the model is if people are adopting it, then, you're probably on the right track. And so I think, really in summary, what I would say is that I would almost pose the question here is, which is, are we at an inflection point for mission-critical real-time systems? I really think that we are. There's a combination of forces acting on the industry right now. First of all, there's tremendous economic pressure, and there's no sign of that really changing anytime soon. And I think, economic pressures typically mean you have to think about different ways to do things. At the same time, there's no decrease, in fact, quite the reverse, for demand in operational utility. No matter what happens in terms of the economy, end customers, end users are always going to want more and more and more capability. That's certainly not going to change. And we've seen this continue, and we talked about this previously at RTI, but we've seen this continued convergence of enterprise computing and machine computing, these sort of two worlds that have typically existed in very, very separate spheres, now beginning to kind of merge together, where we're seeing a much more intimate orchestration between enterprise systems and embedded real-time systems. And I think that's raising a whole host of new challenges about how that that sort of Uber example of system-to-system level integration can really happen. And I think, you know, if you believe these things are going on, then I think we need to really consider new approaches. And those new approaches need to be comprehensive. They need to consider not only technical aspects, but they need to take into account business issues as well. And, you know, we're really trying to do both. Again, we've had a major announcement of our product line, a major, major announcement of our business model. And I think this is RTI really stepping forward and saying, hey, we do believe the world is changing. We don't want to just sit back and respond to that. We want to try to lead that and enable that within our customer base. And so that's really sort of the theme behind everything that we are talking about this week and everything that we're really doing as a company. So I think with that, I'll end the formal comments, and I guess I will turn it back to Mike, and we'll hit some questions.
Okay. Thanks, Kurt. We've got some interesting questions coming in, and remind the audience that you can still enter your question, and we'll get those into the queue to try and answer before the end of our webinar. So, Kurt, the first question we have is, how does your open community source license compare to open source?
Right, sure. So first, you know, I'm not completely sure there's a, you know, universally accepted definition of open source, because, you know, it's really defined by license, and then there's dozens of open source licenses that are out there. But now, having said that, if we assume some general principles of open source, then I would actually say the licenses are very similar in many ways. Under the open community source license, first of all, the software is provided for free. You can build products with it. You can deploy those products, and you can share the code. All right, a lot like open source. One of the key differences, though, with our license is that the sharing is only done within the defined infrastructure community. Okay, so that is an important difference and one to pay attention to. But again, I would say that since the infrastructure community is purposefully, proactively defined as the people and the organizations that you want to share with, then really that should not be a problem. And again, I would put forth that it obviously really hasn't been a problem to the, you know, 20 plus organizations we've signed up and you know, are continuing to sign up today. We do actually believe that our license has some real potential advantages over some of the open source licenses that are out there. But again, as I said earlier, that's really a webinar unto itself. And once again, I would just invite you to attend the October 16th webinar, Open Source 2.0, which will really provide a full treatment of that subject. And I think a lot of people will be very interested in that.
Okay, the next question is, with the license fees starting at $1,000 per developer, how is RTI going to make money?
Well, good question. You know, I get asked that a lot. I can partially answer. There's a question that I'm seeing asking a clarification, which is that an annual fee? And I'll answer that one. The answer to that is yes. So that's $1,000 per year. So thank you for submitting that particular question. There are, you know, permanent so we call that a subscription. There are permanent license options available, and there's even some other, you know, some other twists on this. If somebody really wants to not count developers and count some, you know, count CPUs or whatever, you know, we've got some other approaches. We're really trying to be as comprehensive as possible, not trying to, you know, paint anybody into a particular corner. You know, the sort of the default model, I would say, is per developer. And in fact, I think in almost every case, the 20 that I know of, I think every one of them has actually pursued the per developer model. So, you know, okay, so how is RTI going to make money? Well, I would say this. You know, fundamentally, you know, we believe the market for what we do is potentially a lot larger than what it has been historically and up to today. But at the same time, we convinced ourselves that the collective business models of the various infrastructure vendors that are out there have been at least partially responsible for, I don't know if obstructing is too strong a word, but certainly not facilitating the growth of that market. For us, ultimately, we knew that the only way to find out really how big the market could be is to put our fundamental beliefs into practice. As I said, the model is simple, it's predictable, it's affordable, and it's fair. And so if we're right about that, then there could be a lot of developers out there, And so, $1,000 isn't a lot of money, but, if there's a lot of developers, then we think we can make, a reasonable, healthy business out of that.
Okay. Then the next question is, are you really saying that there are no more royalties for shipping your DDS products?
Yes, we are definitely saying that. So for customers under the IC model that are using the 5.0 release, we're no longer charging license fees for deploying systems based on the RTI Connects products. Again, I'm going to go back and say the challenge in any business is to attach your revenue to where your customers see the value and to scale your business in that dimension. From my experience and having done this quite a long time, I believe that most of the companies that use this type of technology value it based on the size of their development teams and not on the number of products that they ship out the door. And the problem is that, a royalty model sort of runs orthogonal to that type of thinking. We're just trying to get alignment with where we think our customers see value. And, at the end of the day, any business transaction comes down to people feeling that there was a fair exchange of value. So if that's what we're really talking about, then we should make that process as simple as possible to get to. And why have all the pain of a complex model and all these different dimensions and all these things? Because all they do is they just make it difficult to get to the point where we can agree on what value is being exchanged. And I think people value this. I think people assign value based on the size of their team. And so that's really the way the fees in this model scale, directly associated with the size of the development team.
Okay, so next question is asking for some clarification, and could you define more what you mean by a developer? Is that limited to a specific individual, or does that definition accommodate an organization that may be supporting a common project leveraging the RTI software?
Right. A developer is basically somebody who uses the product, uses the libraries. Okay. So there's certainly a legal definition, first of all, and at some point it makes sense to look at what the license agreement itself says. But it boils down to really a pretty simple concept. If you are developing software, and that software uses the RTI libraries, in other words, when it runs, it invokes the libraries, then that makes you a developer. And it's really pretty much that simple. There are obvious examples of people who are developers. We usually know them when we see them. If they're running the tools, they're very likely developers. If they're configuring the infrastructure through, XML, setting QoS policies, quality of service policies, those sorts of things, those are pretty obvious development activities. But again, I think that at the foundational level, the idea is you're writing software, and that software is using the libraries, and it's really actually pretty simple. What a lot of people are, when I talk to them, what a lot of people are interested in knowing is who's not a developer. And I think that, I think the classic example of who isn't a developer are people who tend to be doing testing kinds of activities. So for sure, you could, on one level, you could sort of say, they're using the libraries because, they're taking the software and they're reconfiguring it and, setting up different scenarios and things like that. So you could sort of think about that as use. But test folks are not writing application code that uses the libraries, and so we don't. So this model does not require folks doing testing of the of these RTI DDS based systems to be counted as developers. there are other examples of folks that can do, you know, there are certain types, I would say, of development, certain types of application code that can be developed in such a way that there's no need to actually run the libraries in the development of that code, but I'd say that's really kind of a corner case. And, you know, we have that conversation with our customers. But I think for a sort of a working model and a working definition, I would just think of it in those simple terms. If you're writing code and that code uses the libraries, then you're a developer. And those are the folks that would be licensed if they were using any of the advanced Connects products.
Okay. Next question. Does the $1,000 per year include all the Connects products other than DDS, or is it is it $1,000 for each, like integrator and messaging?
Right. Well, it's not $1,000 per each, but the $1,000 is for RTI Connects DDS. That's the price that we are publishing. I can assure you that the other packages are at similarly low, very attractive prices, but RTI is not putting that information out there publicly. So I invite you to come have a conversation with us, and we can show you what those numbers look like. I guess I've had more than 50 conversations now about this business model with people around the world, and I haven't had a single one where people were unhappy with the price. I'll just say that. I don't expect it's going to be an issue for anybody.
Great. Question then, and does the infrastructure community IC model allow me to include my ecosystem of development partners?
It depends on how the infrastructure community is defined, right? So, in general, I would turn the question around and I would say, is that important to you? Because that's really the issue. We have to go back and remind ourselves of what we're fundamentally trying to accomplish here. Again, what are the goals? The goals are common infrastructure and for many people, interoperability, leveraging that common infrastructure to achieve an interoperable system, okay? What we have to do when we sit down is we have to make sure that we define the infrastructure community in such a way that the folks who need to collaborate toward that common infrastructure are able to do so. And the ability to do so is defined by or is determined by how the infrastructure community itself is defined. So as long as we do a good job of defining the infrastructure community, then yes. I mean, the model is meant to be inclusive. If we start arbitrarily excluding folks from participating, well, now we're working against the objective. And that's not the purpose here. We're trying to enable something what we think is a very, very big thing here, and so we're not going to we're not going to think in conservative terms. We're going to think in, you know, not to be political, but liberal terms about how these communities are defined so that people can accomplish their business objectives.
Sounds good. The next question is a concern for the potential rates increasing. At the point of subscription, could there be terms and conditions that limit the rate? Concern that it could go up in the future?
I think that's true with any product, right? I think that companies change their prices all the time. Sometimes they lower them, sometimes they increase them. We're usually able through just the normal back and forth of putting business agreements in place with our customers to address that concern directly. But I can tell you in our history, we've not gone and changed the price on an existing customer before. So, you know, you can look at history, but we think we can make a go of this. You know, we believe the numbers are there. We've done a lot of analysis. We think the potential world of these real-time systems is a lot bigger than what it has been. We think that's partially, you know, our responsibility, and we've got to take the first step forward to enable, sort of that market growth that I think is a real possibility. And if we do that, hey, we're going to be very, very happy with the numbers that we're talking about here.
You had micro DDS, I think, on one of your slides. The question is about whether that's also available under this licensing model.
Yes, micro DDS is part of the program.
All right.
Yep. As well as I would point out, we are now also working on a certifiable version of that for DO-178C Level A flight critical certification, a program that we're extremely, extremely excited about. And that product is also covered under this model. This is RTI's new business model.
Okay. I think we have time for one more question. Does RTI Connect DDS basic tools and utilities include an Eclipse-like development environment?
Yeah, I think I would say it does. I don't know what exactly is meant by Eclipse Lite, but I think the folks that, we have a very, very advanced set of development capabilities, and we provide a, what I think at least is a pretty robust interface to those tools, a nice modern IDE, and I think that's a pretty strong feature of the product.
Great. Thanks, Kurt. That brings us up to the end of our time for today, and I want to thank our presenter, Kurt Schacher, and RTI for providing us with this very informative webinar. This webcast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen by the end of the day, and you can note that an audio-only podcast version will also be made available. You can go into iTunes, search for embedded_ecast, and you'll find all of Open Systems Media's ecasts, and they're available for you to download and listen to as MP3s. So thanks again for attending and for all your questions, and have a great day.
Wow.